And we're back.
Black and a Half.
Episode 62.
With Silas and Einstein.
I'm Manny Martin.
And together we're Black and a Half. And
today's a special episode, guys. We got a very funny up-and-coming comedian here with us today. We have Quentin Jones.
Quentin Jones.
Yeah.
From
Detroit.
When I was first, you said Quentin, I was like, Quincy's in town? Like, no, Quentin, like Quentin.
Yeah.
Another Q name.
Right?
The reputation.
An authentic Q, because I don't even think that's not even Quincy's real name. So,
yeah.
But, you know, well, he can be who he wants to be.
Yeah. Quentin came in. We had him on a couple. If you listen to our Endgame review, he was on that.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to have him in again just for a Black and a Half experience.
That's right.
You know,
gotta get that. Blacken this shit up.
Get it in there.
That's right.
We talked about some stuff about comedy, you know, working in it, some questions there. We talked about anticipation.
Yeah.
And how that plays into the spoilers and stuff that we've been on a rant about because of
Game
course,
of Thrones.
Nerdapalooza.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have an intervention with Manny. To get him, like, force him down, like, him watch Game of Thrones, I think it's going to be.
Just, straight up Clockwork Orange style.
Yeah, just keeping it all, be like, you're gonna love it, man.
Hollingsworth is doing that right now. He's on episode, or he's on season 3, so.
Oh, catching up?
Yeah, catching up, and he's, I gotta ask
him. You don't watch it?
No.
I just figured, big Irish
thing,
like,
that's
very,
yeah,
it's a very white show,
medieval,
I thought even really.
Kinda, yeah, he's all about that life, so.
You know, the only thing about the show is, like, well, the main, like...
Are there any black people in it?
Yeah, and their dicks cut off. That's the thing.
Black dicks get cut off? Damn.
We don't show it.
Well, I mean, why can't they be white dicks?
I don't know. There is actually another one. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They do that a lot in this, actually. Now I'm thinking of it. There's just characters that I'm neutered. That's what I...
Damn.
That's my character.
I guess that was a thing back in the day.
Yeah, you couldn't, didn't have a lot of punishments.
Oh.
Like, cut your dick off.
Fuck.
That
sucks.
Yeah.
Just rubbing a nub. It's so gross.
Get rid of then they're just power hungry and that's all they want is power. No, they're not going after your woman.
It's so funny. Was it on the movie Keanu? They had like one of the killers had a dick necklace. He took everybody's dick.
What movie?
Keanu with Key and Peele.
I missed that.
Okay, you gotta watch it. It's disgusting.
But a good movie besides that?
It was good. It was funny.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
You'll appreciate it.
I like today's episode is brought to you by
Joy. Yeah, isn't it a fabric softener?
It's a fabric softener, and it's the joy that overwhelms you when all your nerdy things come to fruition.
Yeah, and you get to see your movies that you love and play video games that you've died for.
Big thanks, Skyline Properties. If you use their space for recording this podcast, if you are interested in buying or selling a home, go to silasgetsreal.com and I can hook you up with a we'll show you how to buy a house.
Yeah,
it'd be great. Look, this podcast doesn't pay for itself, so if you want to get it, go buy a house. That's all you need to do.
That's all you need to do.
I'm not asking you to like buy a t-shirt.
No.
T-shirt sticks around.
Right.
You have to wash it. You spill something on it right away.
That should be your merch. That should
be
your merch after the show.
A house.
Yeah. Get a house.
I should get a tiny house.
Yeah. There you go.
And just bring it to every show. Like, no, seriously, a house right
outside.
This
could be yours.
Yeah, that could be yours right now. At Seattle, you can't have something big.
Exactly. 100,000.
Yeah.
Boom.
Where are you going to park it? Let's not. It's not my problem.
Figure it out.
But yeah, this is a fun episode.
It really was.
We're it's a driving force.
It is in the community.
It's a blackout.
It is. We're taking over. We're the only one now.
We don't get a lot of black men on the show.
No, we really don't. It's a lot of women.
They ask us, but we're like, no.
Yeah,
not interested.
Yeah,
gets funnier.
Yeah. Oh.
But Quentin, Quentin is funny.
He is.
So we had him
killing it.
We were just on a show, I guess.
Yeah,
I was gonna say the show I was on with him, but it happened yesterday.
There you go.
But see, when you're playing with time crystals, everything gets messed
everything
up,
gets,
and I don't even know when I am. But this is airing on Wednesday, so okay. So episode number
62.
Quentin Jones.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
So we're in Nerdapalooza.
Yeah, this week.
Weekend just passed.
Yeah.
Right. As we're recording this, I didn't seen Game of Thrones, right?
Okay.
Yet, so I don't know everybody who died in it. Because I'm sure people are dying.
Yes.
So dead.
Well, it's like a weekly thing that people are dying.
Yeah, but this is like a big battle about to happen.
Do you not watch Game of Thrones?
You're
one of those people?
I was waiting for the whole thing to be done with and then watch it. Because everybody's been stressed out.
But you don't advertise it. Usually people are like...
Yeah.
So I'm predicting at least 4 or 5 main characters are going to die.
Okay.
And, you know, like last week we talked about, I set down my spoiler rules, right? What I think you can do for spoilers. And I actually decided to look at the science of it. There's like of why, like I react to spoilers or like to see if there was things. And they actually did studies on, well, there was a study a long time ago that said they took this group of people and they read them short stories.
Okay.
To two groups. One they read the short stories to, and one they gave spoilers to them and then read them the short stories. Mm-hmm. And the people who they gave spoilers to actually enjoyed the short stories a little bit more. And so people were trying to say, well, see, that shows spoilers are good for you. But a bunch of other scientists came out and were like, well, hold on. You're taking out the entire anticipation factor.
Yeah.
Because these aren't stories they were ever going to care about.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of studies that say people find anticipation just as much more, if not more enjoyable than the actual event.
I can see that.
Even if it's like a meal, like they gave people an option of having a free meal right then at this French restaurant, or they could have it in a week. And more people opted for the week later, and they responded higher later about how much they enjoyed it because they're like, you get to think about it, like the planning, you know, like a wedding itself isn't fun, right? It's the anticipation for, you know, and I think that's it for like, I am so not looking forward to Game of Thrones ending now. Like,
yeah, we only have 4 episodes left.
Yeah. And so my anticipation is like, it's sort of weird. It's like, I want to see it, but it's like, I don't want to get spoiled because then you've taken away part of the journey.
Okay, so
because you get to theorize. Half of it.
Okay,
you
know. So here's the thing. I'm not attached to Game of Thrones right now.
Yeah. Okay,
so should the rule be that you can't spoil anything for me up until this point? But I don't care. Well, I kind of want to know.
If you do know, you get. Then you'll never get. If you are one of the people, and I'll say, my wife is not. My wife. There's the saying, anticipation is killing me.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, that's almost true.
Right.
They can't stand the anticipation, so that's why they have to read the end of the book.
Right.
Yep. They have to, and the only way they can enjoy the story is to go through it.
Mm.
And in some ways, it's about respecting the people that you're with. Like, are they somebody who the anticipation is part of the joy, or does the anticipation hurt them? So I know with my wife now, and if it's been weird to talk to her about Endgame.
Yeah.
You just tell her.
Because she asks, because she will not go watch it unless she knows what happens.
Yeah, see,
she will shake
the whole time.
Yeah, my mom was one of those people. Like, she can't watch sports,
right?
Because if it's a, she'd be like,
if it's a close game,
I'm from Michigan, so like, it'll be like Michigan football. She'd be like, okay, when Michigan gets up 21, then tell me. And then she'd be like, okay, then she can enjoy the game of football. But if I'm like, we're down 3 with 4 minutes left, she can't. She can't handle that.
My wife will leave the room. Yeah. She can't handle it.
With the Seahawks, it's like me and Silas, like, he always, like, every day, like, every time we watch it, he's like, you can't just watch a game and, like, just be normal with it. I'm always, like, freaking out. I'm always like, I've got to write on Facebook. I've got to have something else going on.
I can't watch a sports game without Twitter. Yeah. I need Twitter.
Yeah.
But then if I realize Twitter is ahead, it gets back to that. Like, I love the anticipation.
Yeah, yeah.
So like back in Michigan, I live really close to the stadium, mm-hmm. and so I'd watch the game on TV.
Oh, but you'd hear the roar.
I could hear. Oh,
yeah.
And I'm like, something good's happening.
Damn.
And I was like mad because mm-hmm. I knew something good was happening.
So that's what happened to me. Was my neighbors were on a quicker feed than I was, so I'd hear them cheer, and I'm like, well, something good happened. Shit. Mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm. here comes like 20 seconds later a touchdown. I'm like, oh.
I was watching the World Cup at a house, and there was some of us upstairs watching it on cable, and downstairs they were watching it on the internet.
Yeah.
And halftime, they came up and said, y'all have to come down. Because they heard us every time, like, cheering or something. Yeah. And then, like, if there was a break, there's a break coming, and they know we didn't cheer. And they're like, so we were ruining it for them. And I'll say they anticipate, like, okay, could you watch a game again? Or could you watch a game where you knew if you know the results, are you going to watch the game?
Yes.
If it's epic. It has to be epic.
Like, I've watched the Seahawks Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
Like, probably over, like, 20 times.
Really?
Not the whole thing, but just, like, you know, I'll watch it. And then even the one with the 49ers where we won the tip, and then the Green Bay one. But I have not yet gone back to watch the New England Patriots one.
Oh, no. You couldn't.
I could.
I'm the same way. Like, a special moment, like, so... I'm talking to a Seattle audience, but like Michigan basketball,
we're
when they went to...
We're international.
I'm here with Manny Martin, you know, the next big thing out of Seattle. But like, say, Michigan's football's first night game, mm-hmm. I was there.
Oh, shit.
And I was like in it.
Yeah.
And so every time I watch that video of us like coming back from the grave,
you're right.
I feel that. Or so if it's something epic and positive, you can always rewatch it because you just want that.
So give us a quick recap of that actual game. Was it
okay? So you got to give the whole thing. So it's the first night game in Michigan football history, mm-hmm. and we're playing Notre Dame, which is like
big game.
You know,
and this is before their church burnt down.
Yes. Before the church burned down. They're happy.
Notre Dame. I'm a huge football fan.
And so our quarterback, he can't throw. Mm-hmm. And we were down, I think, like 9 points like the fourth quarter. And we bring it back. And in the last like 5 minutes, they score, we score. They score, we score. So in the last drive, mm-hmm. we're down like 4 points. We start at the 20.
Yeah.
And we know we can't throw.
Right.
Like, we know for, like,
and the defense knows you can't throw.
And the defense knows we can't throw. So he, like, drops back, and he throws to, like, the tier three receiver. Mm-hmm. And in football, it's like you're supposed to go out of bounds. And this dude cuts across the field.
Oh, shit.
But he gets us, like, 53 yards.
Yeah.
And then, so now we're, like, close to the goal line. It's, like, seconds left. We try to throw it. No. Fourth down, 3 seconds left, and we have to throw, and we know we can't throw. And everyone's like, he can't throw. We can't do it.
Yeah.
And he throws the ball to the best receiver over the shoulder. One of the ugliest throws. It's like wobbling.
Oh, shit.
And the guy like does some contorted catch, brings it down, and it's just history.
Wow.
But it's like, if you have like a Peyton Manning or like an elite thrower, you're mm-hmm. not worried there. But when you have this dude like Denard Robinson, he's known for running the ball.
Right.
But you know he can't run it.
Mm-hmm.
He has to throw it. And it's just that whole thing for us to beat our arch rival in the first night game. Like all of it, just the adrenaline in that.
Totally.
And rewatching that is just like insane.
Well, did you go to WrestleMania? Was it 19 out here?
Yeah.
Have you ever watched the DVD or any of that? I watched it once.
You know what? I'm shocked sometimes that I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, what happened on that? Like, I only go back to watch wrestling when I want to see a specific moment.
Right.
Mm-hmm, I'm like, oh, what was that? You know.
Shout out to Kofi Kingston.
There you go. New
My
champion.
Guy.
And see, that's the thing. Like, I'm not a fan of, like, I don't watch wrestling now.
Anymore,
regularly,
yeah.
Except,
I don't
like,
watch it as
I turn
much.
On WrestleMania and I'm like, okay, I'll get into this. But I know he won and I heard it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I have nothing invested in him.
Right.
And I have the WWE Network right now for the month.
Yeah.
And I have no interest in watching because I know who won.
Well, that's the thing. So for me, I will go back and watch like Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon in a ladder match. One of the first ones that was like really happened. Mm-hmm. I've gone back and watched Mankind versus Undertaker just to see him get thrown off
the cage.
Hell in the Cell.
You watched the whole match?
I'll skip through the key cards.
More interested in the because I'm interested in the story. So I try to find the moment. I'm like, oh, I want to see the moment that we downed out Eric Bischoff was actually the NWO leader.
Right.
And so I'll watch those parts again, but not really the main.
Yeah, I'll watch highlights where I remember Undertaker came out through the bottom of the ring and pulled somebody through.
Yeah, I'm a huge wrestling fan that you brought up.
But since it's it's more theater to me than it is
I mean, that's the biggest.
It really is. It's a soap opera where people punch people.
Exactly, right.
So the whole Kofi Kingston thing, it came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. That's what made it special. But if you don't watch, you don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Because literally what happened, someone got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they scrambled people like New Day and Kofi Kingston, throw him in the match.
Yeah.
And so he wins this thing to get in the match.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, the whole time, the New Day is this faction that everyone loves, but
they're black.
They're black.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was this frustration about them. They were the longest running tag team champs, but for the last 2 years, they've just been dancing and throwing pancakes. And everyone's like, why are you not using their athletic talent? So they put Kofi in, and then people just start tweeting, Kofi Mania, we want Kofi in the title. We want Kofi. And they literally probably just rewrote the entire thing to put Kofi in there because there was literally a wave of internet and fans. And so
he's the first, other than The Rock.
I mean, he's the first full black champion, right?
Well, so there has not been an American-born black champion. Kofi's from Ghana. He was born in Ghana, but he came over to the States when he was young.
Oh, okay.
But
where's The Rock?
The Rock. So people don't count The Rock, and it gets to the whole skin color politics, he has history in it.
He's probably Polynesian, mostly Polynesian.
Yeah,
right?
but his dad was black. And the reason I don't count The Rock is because they talk him up to be Samoan, his Samoan heritage, and then when they reference him, they don't talk about his dad. They talk about his Samoan heritage and all that. So I'm like, if you're going to paint him as Samoan, I'm not going to count him.
Right, and it's kind of like, I think that's his wrestling background outside of his dad is mostly Samoan, all of his family. But I mean, it's almost the same thing as Tiger Woods, right?
Yeah.
Tiger Woods he won, but he was I consider myself more Asian. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, motherfucker, when the police pull you over, you know what I mean? And that's always been tough for me. I won't drop names, but there was a comic who used to say, and he was half black. He was he said he couldn't stand being black. And I'm like, what the fuck? And that just made me feel some kind of way. And
interesting.
It always is. It's,
in
black
Ballers, people, The Rock is black.
Oh, there you go.
He only references being black and Ballers.
Well, it's a TV show. I know. I mean, it's kind of there's always some, outside of Eddie Murphy, there's always some light-skinned black guy that they hey, we need a black guy, throw him in there. And right now it's The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to have it be me, right?
I'll have it be me. I'll get the abs, I promise.
Shout out to Hollywood. We would like to be in Black Panther 2.
Everybody else would love to be in your movie.
Comedy show so it can be black.
If Black Panther needs a secret brother, I will be there for him. I will be his guide. What was the dude? What's his name? With the eye. What's his name? I can't think of it. Guy. Huh?
Oh, Nick Fury?
No. In Black Panther, he gave him the fruit and all that, and he died.
Gave him the fruit. Oh, you're talking about Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah. I can be Forrest Whitaker's son. I will do it for you. I promise. I can.
That's how black people know Forrest Whitaker is by his half-brother's eye.
Not his body of work.
No,
you didn't say, from the King of Scotland. Remember that? King of Scotland. No. It's the eye guy.
Right. Yeah, so, but it's just the eye because it's everywhere.
Okay, not to kind of break topic. I forgot to ask you, is this on the review? Did you make it through without having to pee? I had to pee twice.
No, I made sure I didn't drink.
You left?
Yeah.
Well, no wonder you're not giving it a full.
Well, okay,
a
I left
full blast.
I actually went by the IGN rules, and they said you could leave during this because it's not crucial, and you could leave during this.
Would you do the Hulk in the diner scene?
I disagreed.
I did the scene with Scott Lang. And
okay, so your weak ass was drinking water during the day? Is that what you were doing?
No, I didn't even drink water. What I did was I was so dehydrated that my wife brought a drink in, but it had salt in it. And I think it made me more dehydrated. Oh, I had to piss.
No, so. I made sure I peed. I took a nap.
Yeah, yeah.
I peed, used the bathroom, all that. I'm like, I'm not leaving this spot.
But I was gross. I didn't even wash my hands after I peed. I just ran back in.
You didn't have to tell the people man.
99.9%.
I'm never shaking my hand again.
I remember this comic, Paul Barak. He told me.
Yeah.
unfollowed me. I don't know, whatever, blocked me, whatever, for a while. But he said, like, once I said something about, like, washing hands, and he's like, you don't have to wash your hands if you're just peeing. I'm like,
That's gross.
I'm like, well, I'm not shaking your hand.
Never again. Holy shit. I saw him.
Well, it depends on how you pee. Like, if you never touch it, you just, like, zoom, and you kind of, like, do this.
Well, I brought that to my wife. I was like, this guy said this. She's like, well, I mean, I could see that you guys, you don't wipe. Like, you're just, like, otherwise it's just, it's like your arm,
well,
right?
Well, I'll tell you this. There was a...
Like, I don't stick my arm places.
I can't remember. It was, like, either the Don King movie or it was an Ali movie. But he had taken a piss and, like, he did, like, he washed his hands before he pissed, then he peed. And then he, like, he went to shake this guy's hand on a deal, and he was like, hey, man, you didn't even wash your hands. He was like, my dick ain't dirty. And I was like, fuck that, man. I'm not touching anybody. I'll tell you a very disturbing thing that I just found out recently. So my dad passed away last year, right? And,
okay.
And I don't know why, but, like, for some reason, like, I just, like, scratched my balls, right? And it's pretty disgusting. But then, like, you know, forget a few hours later, and I kind of, like, smelled my hands. I was like, oh, that smells musty, but familiar. And I was like, my dad used to cut my hair with his musty nut hands.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just so fucking disturbing, man. I'll never be able to think of him the same. I was like, wow, you couldn't even wash your hands before cutting your boy's hair.
It's strange just, like, seeing your parents for what they are as you get older. Like, oh, my goodness.
For real.
Like, my mom, I love her to death.
Yeah.
But just see... My mom has this whole, like, whole thing. You know, it's like, oh, women only want the athletes and blah, blah, blah,
right,
blah,
right,
blah.
Right.
And my mom's like, oh, no, I wasn't like that. And yada, yada, yada. Like, but I'm like, mom, but I hear you now. Like, she went to a reunion. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I should have talked to him. He was an engineer. I should have talked to him. He was an engineer. And then I meet her friends from college. Like, oh, your mom? Oh, I remember she talked to this dude on the football team and this dude on the football team. And so, like, I'm now kind of like, my mom is the type of woman I would hate to talk to.
Oh, right, right.
Like, you're so hypocritical. Mom, you're so hypocritical.
It's the
but
best.
When you look back, it's like she's telling me to do what she wished guys did.
Exactly.
I'm like, and it didn't work on you. It's not working now. And it's ours.
Well, what should she be like scouting out the losers? Like,
I mean, I don't know about scouting out the losers,
like, hey,
but it's,
you know,
like,
what? You kind of smell and you're into D&D. But I'm sure you'll work out.
Oh, wait, the black nerd community gets a bad rep for smelling bad,
you know,
which
what?
They deserve it.
It's kind of like, it's the you know, like, I love the nerd community.
Yeah.
I love it to death. But there are parts of it that I'm always like, yeah, come on.
I mean, it's so true.
It's tough.
Like, if you go to the engineering library at Michigan, there's a stench to it that is not in the non-engineering library.
Yeah.
If you go there on a Saturday at, like, you know, like 10 o'clock, it reeks.
And again, there's probably a bit of absent-mindedness for certain elements. Mm-hmm, you're not trying to impress. You're thinking about other
things,
and I get it.
Kind of cultural, too, that some cultures may not wear deodorant as much as others.
Nerd culture does not wear as much deodorant as others. I think the prime directive would not apply to that.
Yeah.
Like, if they came and said, oh, you can't mess with nerds. They're... you're going to interfere with them by giving them deodorant.
I think about it. It's kind of like, you know, if you're a nerd, like, what we do is inside. And, you know, like, we can play video games for 8 hours. You're gonna fester.
Have you ever thought about that? Like, when you were a kid, like, you spent just days during the summer, like, you're like, oh, shit, I haven't showered in a few days.
Yeah.
I grew up with all women. So it was just my mom wouldn't let me.
She's
like, your room is funky. Go shower and clean it. So, I broke out of that. So now it's like, even if I'm marinating, like if I don't go out all weekend, by Sunday, I was like, I just need to shower. I haven't been anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I'm very conscious now that I'm about to leave the house. I'm wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta go back.
Well, that's the thing. I grew up around all women too.
Tacoma,
so it was just like they literally were like, "You smell funky, and if this room ain't clean when I get home, I'm gonna beat your ass."
Yep.
Like, right, fair enough.
And they meant it too.
Yeah.
So Quentin, so you're from? So I just got to know you. I've been seeing you online. But you're you're from Detroit.
Born and raised, baby.
Right.
313.
You moved to Seattle?
Yep.
For what?
So I moved to Seattle to be an engineer.
For what?
Why did you come to this city?
Are you in school?
No, I'm an engineer at Microsoft.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Shit, man.
Yeah, wow. I don't talk about it very much.
Yeah.
People treat you different.
They do.
They treat you so different.
They think you're less hood.
Because you're smart?
Right?
Well, it's not even less hood, but it's just like one comic, she comes up to me. And she knew I worked there, and it's like, you know, we're talking one day, and she was like, wait, I forget you are successful in life. And I was just like, what did you think I did before? Like, I have a joke where people just, they've never, like, if I don't tell you what I'm doing, people never give me credit for it.
Right.
Like, I used to, like, play poker a lot when I was in college, and, like, one day I come to the poker room, I was like, hey, guys, I finally got my degree. And, like, one of the deals, like, I thought you sold drugs. Like, come on. Bro, it's like, well, it's, everyone else here sells drugs, and people don't let you know they don't sell drugs. So I thought you sold drugs.
That's a lesson about self-promotion.
Yeah,
I guess.
Man, he's been doing a podcast for 4 years. I was at a show with him and said something. Somebody said, you do a podcast?
Jesus.
And he doesn't?
Yeah. Don't give me credit, man. Like,
you got to self-promote. Or people
I do need to sell. I don't want to promote. I'm an engineer.
I mean, like, you're going to school. Like, you got to tell people, like, yeah, I'm going to school.
Yeah, but I tell people I do comedy. I don't claim being a comic yet. But I do tell people I do comedy. But, my job is my job. It's how, you know, I make money. I love my job for all people listening.
I just have to put this out there, man. Like, when I was doing the open mic showcases over at Parlor, it was always a thing of, hey, we can do this, but you guys have to bring people. And literally, Quentin brought like 45, 50 people to a show. And I was like,
I got bringability out here.
Yeah.
How did you do it?
So,
did you send an email out?
I did, actually.
Hey, guys, I actually do comedy.
So it was getting to a point.
Were you nervous about that, though?
I was. The first part of my set, when I rewatched it, like, it went well, but I could see my nerves. And once I got through the first set of jokes, I'm like, okay, they're going to laugh. Right. Like, my boss is laughing, all of that. But it got to a point at work where it was like, say, like Fridays, I would leave early. Like, I was going to Portland with Dante Barnett. Shout out to Dante, you know, drive me around and all that. So I'm like, hey, I'm doing these shows. And then the younger people in the office were talking about it because, you know, they would come and see. And so people are like, hey, we actually want to see you. So I sent out an email to, like, my boss's bosses underneath group. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, I'm doing this mic. It's at Parlor, you know, right across the street. You know, kind of after work, you can work late, come see me. And then people came. But that was only about half of them.
Wow.
So there was just I'm blessed to have people want to support me.
Yeah.
You know, people who hear my comedy or who know me just want to support me in anything.
You know, it's going
to
be really fun.
What's that?
Over the years, watching less and less people come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're still here. I'm sure.
It's like, nobody loves me.
You know what? It's interesting, though. I just want to, and I don't know if I told you this, but I guess the vocals on that tape don't do it justice.
Yeah.
Like, so the way Parlor used to be, it used to have really low ceilings. And you could hear the laughter just reverberate through that place. But when they moved out those panels, it's like the laughter just goes up.
Why did they move the panels?
Because the lights went out.
The lights go out. And so, in an ideal comedy club, and you can watch this movie called I Am Comic, and they explain it really well there. You want low ceilings because the laughter gets trapped, bounces back, and then other people hear laugh, and so laughter gets contagious.
Yeah, yeah.
So when it goes up to the ceiling and you can't hear it, it's harder both for the comics and for each other just to get in the mood. And it's hilarious that a comedy club needed to change some lights, and we're like, oh, well, this looks good, and made it like a horrible setup.
Yeah, like, I watched the tape, I'm like, did anyone? Like, I remember people laughing, but I can't hear anyone laughing.
Yeah.
So, in all fairness, like, the two probably best sets of the night, well, I guess three. Well, actually, I'll tell you the two strongest, you and Dallas Chang. I did not see Dallas.
No one saw Dallas Chang. Because
we had all seen, and I'm not, like, you don't have to censor any of this out. Dallas would go to the open mic, and he would try the most raunchy jokes, and they would just fall flat.
Yeah.
But then he and they worked, and he brought he must have brought his coworkers or something.
Yeah,
he
brought like 20 people.
Brought like 20 people also.
But he like did like the joke when he talks about like
hiding
a vagina and like camping out or something like that.
And it just got roars. It was wow.
And we're just like, this joke. I remember I was like, this is working.
You remember we told him like last or 2 weeks prior, don't do it. It's
that
not going to work.
Sucks. And he went for it.
Yeah. So did you, like, why'd you put him on? If he was being just raunchy, like,
ooh, we're getting somewhere with
okay,
this.
So
what
it was.
What made you think?
So one of the things that I wanted to do was, at least with that at the time, was there were so many people coming out supporting us every week that I was like, look, this guy needs a chance to just see what it's like to be on a big show, and I'll help him to do better jokes. But I mean, literally, there are people who would show up occasionally, and I was like, okay, I'll just put them on one later. Okay. But for somebody who shows up week after week, I wanted to reward that because it's like, you support this mic and. You know,
now, what if he had totally bombed with all that? Would you have been like,
well,
you think you would have rethought that or been like, well,
I'll tell you this lesson. There was an individual who bombed, and
a few individuals
that bombed, and I was just like, I, you know, it, at the same time, I was like, this is something that they have to learn. So it's
now,
like,
here's the question.
Yeah.
Do they think they bombed?
No,
probably not.
Okay.
Nope. No, no.
Here's the thing about Seattle.
Yeah.
Or comedy in general. Yeah, about comedy in general is just like, I've heard people who I'm like, that sucked.
Yeah.
And then they walk off stage and they was like, good set, good set. And so for me, it's like when people do it to me, I'm like, did I suck? And you're just being nice. Mm-hmm. And so I don't trust any compliments from anyone in this city because it's like,
it's not the city. I think it's, you know what? It's like,
I bet that happens in LA too.
What it is, it's like if you were, what they're saying is you got up there and tried, and that is good. And that is more than most people did.
Right.
It's just like as if you were playing on a game and you're losing. Right, you're in a basketball court. You're losing. You come off. It was like, hey, good work out there. Good work. Okay. No, it's not.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not. It's different if they go, dude, that joke killed, and it didn't.
Right,
that's where it's dishonest. But I think it is more of a good job for going.
Okay,
good job for doing it.
But I don't think anyone's. I don't think some people see it that way. Some people are like, oh, good set, and like, yeah, I did good.
Oh, yeah, those people have ears.
There are comics that I've known for quite a while where they'll go up. And they're like, oh, man, I crushed that set. And I'm like, did you witness the same thing we all just witnessed? Because
you know what I did? Like, I would take I'd take a recorder in the back, right? And I would actually record other people's sets or sets before me. Mm-hmm. Or the introduction. Usually, the introduction for you is one of the louder parts of a set, right? Mm-hmm. So what I would look at, I'd look at the meter on my recorder. And I'd be like, okay, so that's my goal is, if I'm not getting that much volume, the joke's not hitting as hard, right? And so for me, it's like, you know, you scientifically can look at how your set did because your volume control isn't lying.
Yeah.
Like if you're like, well, they were smiling. Well, that's not our goal.
Totally. You know, and I think there's this disillusion with comedy in general. There are some people who were literally, they always think that they killed and they think comedy is this easy thing. This girl who would come maybe once every blue moon, she got up in front of her mom and she was just raunchy. And I think maybe two people laughed, but then she like looked at her mom like, yeah, I did it, bitch. You know what I mean? Like, holy shit. Right. Then she shows up a few years later, God bless her heart. And she literally is like, yeah, do you think I could record an hour here next week? I'm like, probably not. Like, I was just like, I don't know if you know how hard it is. I was like, you know, but I'm trying to be positive. I'm like, here's the thing. See if you can do a few hours, like, see if you can do an hour just practicing first, like, in front of people. Do it because you never know how it's going to be in the thing. Because she had wrote out the whole hour on paper.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, I was like, you don't know if this is going to get laughs. You know what I mean?
Like, she hadn't even rehearsed this hour.
I hadn't even rehearsed it.
Wow. That's crazy.
She was like, theater.
Yeah.
Do the theater.
Do, like, the podcast.
That's a play. You just did a play.
Yeah.
You wrote a play.
You wrote a one-man play.
Yeah. So go do that. And if it's well, then clubs will pick you up.
Exactly.
But here's the question. As a new comic, I'm like, do you got, like, what is your writing process? So for me, I have a premise and I have like maybe like three or four tags.
Totally.
And then I figure it out and I go to another one. I'm like, and I figure it out and I figure it out. But I never write.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you guys write?
God. So I sucked at school. So it's like, it's hard for me to sit down with a pen and paper and just write.
It's the worst.
So for me, it's like, and this is lazy, but I usually wait for shit to happen to me in life. And then I'm like, oh, this is good. Let me go talk about it on stage. So like when I went to go visit my brother-in-law in jail, I'm like, oh shit, this is funny. And then it like took me back to the one time I got arrested and sat in there for 3 hours. And I'm like, you know, okay, here's a tag on this. Here's a tag on that. So
build on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, sometimes you could sit around for fucking months waiting on a new joke to happen because it's like, you look at your life differently than other people do. Right. So it's like where I see some shit that you did is being interesting. You might be like, oh, that's stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know. For me, I wait for it to happen and then I'll try it on stage, but I'll put it in my phone and keep it.
Okay,
notes.
Yeah. I definitely take notes. Or like conversation, because I feel like I always try to be like comical.
Totally.
Like I was on the phone with a good friend this morning and I was talking about clout.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone was like, yeah, you did that video for clout. And I'm like, yeah, I want all the clout. I'm tired of people making fun of me. You want this thing? And I just went on this whole rant and I was like, wait, I need to write this down. Like,
exactly.
I need to bring it back because that's a bit.
Exactly. Give yourself a fair opportunity. Like I had to always remind comics, don't judge it off what's happening at Parlor at the open mics. All comics. There's no crowd. So you really don't know if these are going to hit hard. You know, what about you? Yeah. What do you do?
Well, mine's evolved over time. Because when I first started, I came from a theater background. And so I was really into writing everything out, like completely. But what I found was I felt like I was sounding too monologue-y. And if somebody interrupted my set, it threw me off. And so I've kind of got a hybrid process now because, and so what I had to do was for a while was not practice. I stopped practicing. So I used to practice my sets, but I would write it down and then just try to remember, but not practice it. And I would go up to get it natural. Rick Kunkler gave me that advice because he came from the same background and he was like, yeah, your problem is you're just practicing. Don't practice right now.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm a little better at improvising jokes on stage, like I do, I get an idea for it, or like if I'll write out the joke and then I'll try some things on stage that I'm thinking of, and then I'll get back off and I'll write that out if it worked, and I'll try to, and it's at some point I will write the entire joke out.
Okay.
And so that I've seen it at least, or some ideas that I want to expand on, like I'll get on this like little rant about it that I'm like, okay, so I got to get all of this down, and I might try it at some point, see how it goes, and sometimes it bombs right away, so I don't.
You know, that's a good point, because once a joke is complete, I'll put it in a book just so I don't forget it, because you'll be surprised at like year one. By the time you're year seven, year eight, you'll be like, I forgot about that joke.
Yeah. I mean, I'm year one, and I remember I saw a recording of me at Trenchers.
Yeah.
And there was this joke that I hadn't done. I was like, that's funny. Why don't I do that joke anymore?
Exactly.
And I had to bring it back up.
Yeah. Right.
So that's year one for me.
I have some jokes that I still can't do for my first year that are good jokes, but I go into this, I start doing it the same way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm performing it like, no offense, a year one comic. Like, right. I'm like, I need to break it. I get in this rut suddenly, and it's not the casualness that I have.
I would say just good practice for anybody. You do this really well. But for anybody who's just starting out, sometimes it's just good to just go up, get comfortable, and talk on stage. Because it's like, I was like that. I remember I had to say everything that I wrote from start to finish. I'm like, oh, I didn't get this word in. You know, just like, there couldn't be. And it doesn't allow for you to just break that fourth wall and just be natural. Like, I wish, and I'm not saying everybody needs to do crowd work, but sometimes just talking to people.
Yeah, crowd work is really hard for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Caroline Ray told me do that. She's like, I gave her a ride home, a ride to her hotel, and she was like,
I used to be in love with her, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. So she was like, she said, you have good jokes, but you need to just to learn to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you mean? She's like, just pick one person and start talking, telling your joke to them.
Yeah.
Just do that. And so I did that, and she was like, yeah, you got it. I think what helped me a lot was hosting was the best thing for me to learn to, because at Laughs, I was hosting at Laughs in Kirkland a lot. And of just those moments of going up there and looking at them and saying, so the bathrooms are over there you know, there. And then learning to slowly transition into material without being like, okay, I'm done telling you things.
Joke
now
number
here
one.
Are my jokes. You know, like, you had to like ease into it and like you have to say a little thing like, oh yeah, yeah, and making a couple jokes, and that it both loosened me up to talk to them and also to come up with little jokes.
Yeah. There. Or just things.
And so I had my own like opening, like I had my own host jokes that I do. That I came up with just doing so many host sets just to come across, you know, a little funny, and then learned how to ease into
your real material.
Right. Material. And, you know, watching a lot of headliners, you'd see that they'll start off their set with something local that they saw just to kind of like
bring them into
it. Especially at Parlor, like the headliners would always be like, oh, so we're on the third story of a fucking mall. You know, and then it's like,
you know, and then people will laugh, and then, you know, you start working into your material, and just those casualness and coming up with jokes, and people aren't expecting those to be super polished, even though you do learn a lot of times, oh, well, I'm in Yakima, I can use that same bit I came up with in
I'm like, next time I go to LA, whenever I go to LA, I have a joke about the water. I'm like, y'all water is thick out here. Like, I can't wait to use it.
Definitely.
It's boiling inside me.
Yeah, you have little openers for different settings that, you know, have worked.
And I meant to tell you this. What was that show? Was it Surfing or Couch Surfing or what was the, on HBO? It was the identical thing of the parlor.
What is it new on HBO?
It's on HBO.
Crashing?
Crashing.
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 That episode.
Oh my God.
That episode was so
good.
To a
T. Wait, which one?
So there's an episode with Dustin Hoffman where they're at like a. They must be at like some sort of.
He's supposed to be like middling or something for. And they have the one hosting and that guy who was the comedy club manager headlining and he gets demoted. Remember?
Oh,
so they're at this club and they're like, okay, so here are the rules that we have. You're going to be giving out the.
Here's some jokes. It works every time.
It's like such a corporate comedy.
And they had the timer at the bottom.
Yeah, I remember that. And it was like, there's so much of it that reminded me of Parlor, the way they.
The lights and the music. And it's just like, Jesus.
So I can see that. Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I really enjoy getting back out into the grit of it all, man. Like just doing Underground last week was.
It's funny. I didn't know you were a comic.
Really?
So when I first met you, like, I was like, oh, he's the, huh?
Like, you met him at Parlor? But you
So I met him at Parlor, but it's like him and JR, they were like always.
We would never really go up and
never
do material.
They'd be like, hey, guys, we're at Parlor. So I thought he was just like the booker, like the actual booker.
Right, right.
And my phone is Manny Parlor Booker.
That's interesting. And that might explain some things, why people always write to you.
That's a good point.
And then one day, like, I'm like on YouTube. And I see Heart of the City. I'm like, holy crap, that's the Parlor Booker. He does comedy. And then I followed him on Facebook and I see he's doing all this stuff. I didn't know he was a comedian.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That was, I mean, it's,
and
I guess it's
not a booker.
Yeah. But it's like a first year comic thing. Like there's so many people who I didn't know were comics.
Right.
Like say Erin Engel. I had never seen her, like my first 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, yeah.
I had never saw her do a set. And then it was like, all right, we're featuring Erin Engel today. I'm like, she does jokes?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what?
That's interesting. I mean, you know, It's one of those things out of sight, out of mind, too, right? It's like you never see these people do stuff. Like Ralph Porter, probably one of Seattle's most decorated comics who's opened up for everybody. You don't see him post very much online. So it's like, oh, yeah, it's like you don't think of him when it comes to like booking stuff. So it's kind of why I made more of a point of actually taking Instagram things and putting them on and just like, hey, I'm doing this week.
Yeah,
and
because you're in, so there's like the. Small book shows that pay like $20 and you get a slice of pizza.
Right, right.
But like
that's kind of fancy.
But it's like I'm seeing these shows. I'm like, all right, people are at these shows with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they're not in the comedy group. And it's like who's booking these?
Well, they're not talking.
Yeah, because
they're watching. They're always watching.
Yeah, people are like just holding on to these opportunities and stuff like that.
There was a guy, Nick Dector, a friend of mine. He was telling me like he's like, I hated you so long because he would see me on every. He's like, you were on everything all the time, and I see you at open mics and you fucking bomb every time. But he didn't realize I was using the open mic to try new jokes.
Right.
I wouldn't say one thing that I ever used because I had having children, my time is limited. So I'm like, I'm not going to go up here and just stroke my ego.
Yeah,
I need to test this joke.
Right.
Yeah, so he would see me, he's trying to, and he'd never see me do a set. And then he like finally came to laughs and watched me like do my host set. He's like, oh, I get it now.
It's so funny because the show that he just did with me over at Nine Yards.
Yeah.
Him and this booker kind of had this kind of tumultuous relationship, right? And literally he comes up to me afterwards. He's like, I forgot how fucking funny Silas is. And I was like, you forget that he's a really good comic. But, you know, it's like out of sight, out of mind. So, yeah.
I mean, so it's funny you said that because, I mean, let's just put it, I'm a year one comic, but I personally feel that like I am a better quality than the typical year one comic.
I agree.
Which some people are like, oh, Q's got a big head on him. Like he says he's going to be great. And I'm like, but that's how I operate.
Right.
Like if I don't say I'm going to get there, I'm not going to get there.
Totally.
If I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to like, you know, do these shows and be funny at these shows, then I'm not ever going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's kind of like sports. I remember when I was in high school, a person who was in college, he was like, I need you guys to realize this now. The guy that you're looking at in the NFL is your competition.
Right.
And I have to see it that way. So I see like, you know, Manny, I love you, but you're my competition.
Exactly.
You know?
Be better.
Except they're not.
True.
In your mind.
He's not like, because there's a lot of comedy to be done, but I have to compare myself to the best
Manny.
But
the guy in the NFL... The wide receiver, he's not going to turn to the coach and say, hey, you know what? We should put this guy on.
Yeah.
Or he's not going to say, hey, give him my spot because I need to do something else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like the people in the comedy are, I mean, you could say coworker, but they're the ones that are going to put you on shows and mm-hmm. recommend you for things. Totally. So they are, they're climbing the ladder with you and they're integral.
So I say competition, not as like, but it's like, there's a healthy, you know,
I want to be better than I want to best.
Yeah. It's like, so one of my favorite comedians out right now, his name's Drew Dunn, the guy that won Sick. And mm-hmm. I watch him. I actually did guest sets for him and I watch his stuff and I'm like, I need to get, like, I'm not good enough to do whatever until I'm getting Drew Dunn like last. I need to be as good as or better than Drew Dunn.
Right.
And it's all love. Like, he's like, hey, come to Boston, you know, whatever, whatever. But every time I see him, I have to, you know,
right.
get there.
Yeah, my guy is Zoltan Kazas.
Yeah, I've heard of that guy.
Man, that Dry Bar Comedy just is blown up.
Blown up, like, yeah, totally.
He's completely the Friday night show at mm-hmm. Laughs had like 120 people. That's last night when I went there.
Yeah.
The Friday night show at 10 o'clock
yeah.
had 12 people.
Wow.
Okay. And that person was on Last Comic Standing.
Yeah.
This, like, Dry Bar Comedy is completely blowing people up.
Yeah. So what is Dry Bar Comedy?
It's in Utah. It's a place in Utah that they did. They filmed a bunch of clean comedy sets. You mm-hmm. had to do completely clean.
Okay.
And they put it online for $1, like these sets.
Mm-hmm.
And like Brad Upton, a local comic, went down there. You know, he works clean. He's got like 100 million views on there.
Just on these
and
videos.
And so people are, and Zoltan's like the same. He has a few videos that have got like 50 million views. So now he's going wherever. And he's booking theaters on his own, like on a Wednesday before a club, and he's filling it. Yeah, like it's so many people know about him now because of the cat Jessica they had, an overweight cat, and that's the story that he had on there.
Yeah.
But he's been somebody that I've featured for him when he was like his first headlining at Laughs, and mm-hmm. become friends with him. But he's so demanding of what he expects from the audience as far as laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not satisfied. He didn't feel like he does well with a reaction that I would beg for, you know. Like, he's nailing it.
And
like,
here's the thing. Crushing. Like, Zoltan is a white guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
I assumed.
Hungarian. Oh, Hungarian. Okay. So white to us.
Yeah. White with a little bit of zest.
Exactly. And you know Lavelle Crawford, right?
Yeah, of course.
So Lavelle, majority black room, right?
Mm-hmm.
Zoltan goes up and crushes in front of Lavelle's room. And literally there was an agent in the back and like from LA. And he's like, hey, man, here's my card.
Mm-hmm.
Call me on Monday. And I remember I talked to Zoltan afterwards and I was like, dude, anything come of that? He was like, no. The guy was like, who are you? And so it's so funny that somebody so like Hollywood is just a bunch of like, I don't know. It's kind of fluff. You know what I mean? And it's like, you got to try it a million times. Like,
but Zoltan, I think he's one of the funniest people who's not famous yet.
I agree.
Like he delivers more than most that I see. And I'm like, how is he not?
His writing is amazing. I mean, his stage presence is great.
He works for everybody. And he's one of those people that digs on material. Like, it's a joke about Costco that you're like, well, a lot of people have done Costco.
Right.
But he found a new way and dug into that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd say like Gary Goldman for me, he reminds me. But I think he's funnier than Gary. But I have a similar. Do you have a person that you're always like, oh, I got to get to them.
I don't know. I mean, I guess Jeff Dye.
JR? No, okay.
Jeff Dye.
Yeah, yeah. So I met him. It was actually really interesting. Yeah. The same show.
Mm-hmm.
He did a guest set there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, and everyone's like, Jeff Dye's here. Jeff Dye. I'm like, who the hell is Jeff Dye?
Yeah.
And I meet him. He was really cool. He's like, I'm Jeff. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And I look him up. I'm like, oh, he's.
Yeah, NBC and all major. This other shit. Yeah.
And I had no idea because I think he was on the same show as you when you did Hannibal.
Yeah, yeah. So at the Showwear Center.
Yeah. He was on the same show, but he had stopped through Underground the day before or something like
just
that.
Just to work on some stuff.
Yeah. And I was like, who the heck is Jeff Dye?
That's right.
And I was just like, okay, this guy's fine. I thought he was just like some regular totally. Seattle dude or
and
something.
I feel like
that.
Jeff is always. What I'm trying to get to is because he grew up like a few blocks down the street from me. You know, we graduated the same year and I will always like Jeff was always that guy. Like when I first, even before I started doing comedy, they were like, hey, you know, Jeff, I was like, no, but we went to the same church.
One of those people you keep hearing about. And then one day, like you.
Exactly. Right. And so I remember going to, I think it was Giggles at the time. and seen him headline. And I was like, oh, this dude's fucking hilarious. And one of my friends was like, well, you're that funny. You could probably do, you know, comedy. And I was like, really? You think so? And, you know, it just kind of was in the back of my head. And then I got a promotion at work and my mom was like, yeah, that's great and everything, but I thought you would always be a comic or an actor or something. And I was like, well, shit, let me go try it. And then, you know, I would do all these shows and I would see Jeff pop in and I'm like, damn, that guy is funny, just calm on stage, collected. And I was like, well, that's kind of what I want to get to. So
what's funny is like you have parents that are like, I thought you just go get a nice bank job or something that makes some damn money.
And that's the funny thing. Like, I'm an engineer. I'm literally an engineer who wants to go to or do a job full time that will pay half, less than half of what I'm making. And I want that.
You know what's interesting? There is a comic, Fahim Anwar, who was out here in Kirkland. Fahim actually was in the same spot you are. He was an engineer. And he literally was like, I don't want to do this anymore, and just became a comic in LA and is doing pretty well for himself. Got a Netflix special.
Start tucking it away.
Start tucking the money away. You know what I mean? Keep working.
I'm definitely not tucking the money away, Microsoft. I'm all in.
That's the thing. Even with the bank, like when they hired me on this new job I'm at, on my resume, I put Heart of the City, Kevin Hart's Heart of the City. I put NBC, and they were like, well, this is interesting. And then they hired me, and I'm not even qualified. So,
okay, got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Brought 45 people to Parlor on a Wednesday night. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. So you were all dressed. We were talking about merchandise earlier.
Yeah, we were. We were.
Now, here's the thing. There's a big part of me that just said, your question was like, oh, is it too early? Is it too early to sell merch? I don't think it.
I have a great story on this.
I think it's good if you can, if you're getting in the shows that you can, because most of the time, I think it's a waste if you're not featuring, because they won't buy. Like, the moment you start featuring, you can usually get some sales.
Right.
Even then, the second you headline, they just start buying it. Even if you're. It's just because you're the last person. If you close out a show, you can even sell it. Mm-hmm. But you can't sell it from the third spot in.
No. Yeah.
And hosts should never sell is kind of a thing.
So
and
I asked the question for two reasons. Yeah, so I did, again, same week. I've basically lived it underground the last. Mm-hmm. In the month of March, I lived in underground, it felt like.
Great place.
Yeah. Best bathrooms in the city. But it was like I was hosting or I did guest sets and like the other people had merch and I had nothing.
Right.
And they're like, hey, what do you have? And I'm like, well, I got an Instagram, but you're 50. I don't think you want it. And so I was like, I should have something for like, I'm not bringing it to, you know, an open mic, but if I do or get the opportunity at a show, I feel like I should have something like a card or a t-shirt or something like that. I don't think there's a time limit on that. I think it's just how big is the show you're doing, then you should have something because it's advertising. That's what I feel
I mean, it's just the thing you'll run into is like we meet a lot of people that it's before 2 years, we just don't know if you're going to keep it.
Right. I'll tell you this. There was a guy who was literally in 3 months and he was on a show and one of the comics convinced him. I think he was just getting money out of him. He was like, hey, I'll make your shirts. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he literally had no punchlines. Nothing was funny on his thing. But he was like, get out of there. And he just kept saying, get out of there. And then at the end, he's like, yeah, I sell these shirts that say get out of there. And we were kind of like, OK. And I don't think he sold one shirt, but it was like. God bless him for trying, man. But it's one of those things of like, never do it from the hosting spot. If you're a feature, always ask the headliner, is it cool if I sell these? Because you don't want to take from their sales. And I would always say set up behind the headliner. Let the headliner be first when the audience comes out. You know,
or what about cards at least? Like say,
cards. I'm making cards right now that I need. I actually had these.
We could talk about this offside. I have a great card. I got it when I was in LA at a comic book store.
Okay.
And they were like they're like a card when you hand it to somebody, they feel it. And I was like, when I get cards, I'm getting them from there. So I can share that with you.
Totally.
Those cards are like serious. They were amazing.
Silas has really great cards. They're like Magic the Gathering.
Magic the Gathering card.
They have him and then it has his stats on the back and stuff, which is, I mean, so thinking outside the box.
Any little giveaway, if you got that, you can always do that.
Yeah, I mean.
Just know that a lot of times if you're not in the feature spot or they get tossed or whatever. Like it's just,
I mean, knowing.
Right. Well, like, if people come up to me, I'm not going to be like, totally. But like, when I hosted for Demonstrator, I probably messed that up. Or with Andrew's show, people literally came up to me like, where's your stuff?
Right.
Like, and it wasn't like one. It was like a few people like, where's your stuff? And I'm like.
So here's the thing. The best thing that Manny's ever done, Manny's really good about being social with people. The number one thing they ask when industry comes up, they talk about, is your followers on Twitter and Instagram. It's so sad, but that's like the biggest thing you can do.
Yeah.
If you can get them any way you can get them just to sign up on your Twitter to follow you or something, that's the best thing you can do for yourself. If you want the extra money of selling a shirt, it's nice. But so Manny does that, and then we get all these people that come to his shows.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so that's the best investment he ever did was that he takes the time to
like
add
on stage.
But he's with them and he'll enter my stuff in their phone.
But I should have a card too. But even at the end of the last show, I just headlined. I was like, hey, we're doing a lot of stuff, man. Add me on, at Manny Martin Jr. on Instagram. I was like, follow us on Black and a Half.
It takes personal time with them just to like add on.
Yeah, I'll enter it in your phone. And
do you follow back though?
I do.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. So this is very like.
You can mute them.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
That's actually a good point.
I'm very like cynical, and I have this app where if I see you follow me on Instagram, I'll follow you back, but it tells me if you unfollow me. Oh. So I'm unfollowing you right the fuck back. You know what I mean? I'm not going to play
so
that game.
So I'm like that way. It's kind of like, this like, poker thing where it's like, I went to Vegas and like I was drunk just telling people about my comedy, and I got a bunch of followers. I was like, so-and-so followed you.
Yeah.
But just because I was slawed out in Vegas,
right.
I didn't get back to them for like 2 days, and then it's like, unfollow. People are very,
quick.
So I want the big number so I can just tell people follow me, and they're like, oh, he's at 60,000, whatever.
Right. But I mean, that's the big thing. I mean, when industry comes and asks you, hey, how many followers you bringing? You know what I mean? And it's like,
People have been booking at Parler because they have big followers and fan pages, crazy. Not because of quality of their comedy.
Yeah.
They're new comics.
It's interesting. Leonard Utz, I remember he went on like an Instagram Twitter rant where he was like, I'm tired of these like Instagram, YouTube people who aren't comics taking my time.
Yeah.
Because you're not funny. And there's a few of them where it's like they go on stage and they're like, oh, yeah, so-and-so does 30 minutes. And they just like talk crap about people. Look at you in that shirt. I'm like, that's not comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But you have this following and people will come see you. And it's like, but you're not funny on stage. So it's interesting.
Lisa Lampanelli.
She would use. She was a sulfur weight. Like
she just insults everybody.
Yeah, or talk about how she loves black men. But
those people though. Let's be. There's a comment. Jezame.
Peluso.
Yeah, she was from Girl Code. She went up first time I met her.
Was that Carly Aquino? The one who was on Girl Code.
I definitely did Jezame.
Okay.
I definitely had that.
Okay.
But like,
because I remember Carly couldn't do the time, and Harold Gomez had to.
Okay, he might have came back.
Okay.
They didn't have like as much material when they were going, and they like, and it was like, oh yeah, I've kind of, it's not familiar. Still early on comics, but they had such a following, people would come out.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've been doing comedy and they built up the time. Theo Von was apparently like, and he was open about like, I'm new. It was his dream, but he couldn't do the time.
No.
And so people would cover for him and he would stretch it out, but he was so dedicated to the craft and he could get booked because he would bring people that he's come up to be one of the most respected
comics in the comedy club scene. It's interesting. I mean, there are moments in your career where you just realize you aren't shit, just like with followers, because I'll tell you what, when I did that, who's the girl with the lipstick? Miranda Sings. She was a YouTube sensation and it was all these little kids loved her. And they're like, hey man, we just need you to do like 10, 15 minutes in front of her. I was like, in front of kids? Are you serious? All right, whatever. And so I go up and they're like, kids almost crying in tears. They're like, are you guys ready for your host and MC? And they're like, because they think it's her coming up. And then they're like, Manny Martin. And they're like, huh? And it's just silent. I'm like, hey guys. And struggled for 7 minutes, and then all of a sudden I was like, all right,
whenever I feel like challenged. So I did this open mic thing they have at UW,
yeah,
and it's mostly students and their friends are there, so I was like, blah 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 blah, yeah, blah, 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 yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's like 300 students there.
Right.
And I go on stage and like, all right, coming up next, Quentin Jones.
Yeah.
And I get no music. I get nothing. And it's just nothing.
Right.
And I'm like, well, this is awkward. But at the end of my set, like, they're just roaring.
And you'd want them over.
Yeah. And I love when I have to like punch up, totally. You know, to get the crowd on my side. So,
yeah, man.
I like those. I mean, did you win the kids over?
At the very end, it was definitely a struggle trying to, how do I relate to somebody who has like 20 years less of life than me? You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to bridge the gap. I'm like, oh, Fortnite. You know what I mean? Just shit that,
you go get them water.
Exactly.
I got the scar, you know.
Quentin, we're out of time here. But it's been great having you on. Besides here in the podcast, people can check you out. Quentin was on for our review show of Endgame, so check that out. It's already dropped a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So listen to that if you've seen the movie.
Yeah.
Or you want to hear a review.
Yeah.
You want to hear a review. We don't spoil much on there.
I tried not to.
But it's interesting. Quentin, good having you on. It's
great
nice
to
find
here,
a blurred
totally.
In town. I'm sure you're going to be back.
Yeah. And where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at QKillem, QKILLEM. I have a Twitter there, but don't follow me on that because I get reckless. I delete all my drunk tweets, so I guess you can follow me there.
Okay.
And on Facebook, Quentin Jones. So check me out. Love to talk to people.
All right.
Hey, awesome.
Black and a half?
Black and a half.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Join us. Impressive.